production. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
Hi, everybody. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. It's only been, you know, we're starting to approach our third year, so I finally got the host names figured out. Anyway, on live tonight, if you want to join in the discussion, it's 800-407-KSAB during the program talk at ksab.org. All I can say is may God have mercy on our program tonight. So anyway, for what we're going to start off with tonight in the intro, let's get Bobby Neer on.
Thank you, Dave. Near the end of Season 2, episode number 55 to be exact, viewers are treated to one of the very best episodes of the entire series. In his review, Ken wrote that this story has all the elements that make The Fugitive special, and I could not agree more. It is one of those rare stories so overloaded with exciting and compelling moments, you dare not take your eyes off the screen for a minute for fear you will miss something. Telly Savalas and Carol Rawson return in one of their numerous appearances during the four-year run of the series. The very best work by far by both of them. They create instant screen chemistry combined with an emotional and heart-rending story, and what emerges is a true fugitive classic. In Act 1, Richard Kimball finds himself back in some familiar territory, working as an orderly in a hospital. In my opinion, this is one of three big mistakes he makes in this story. Also in the hospital is a man named Victor Leonetti and a visitor, his wife Anne. As we find out later, they not only are old Kimball family acquaintances, but their daughter Jeannie was once one of Kimball's patients. I say was because, as Victor tells it, she died from some sort of heart ailment, and he has held it against Kimball for years, believing that the doctor went on vacation, leaving her behind to die at a critical moment. Now Victor is in the hospital himself, and he has gotten his own fatal prognosis from his doctor, a fact he keeps a secret from his wife. She visits him, comes to actually pick him up and take him home, and recognizes Kimball immediately, and Victor begins seething when he finds out about it. But curiously, he doesn't just pick up the phone and call Gerard. He simply storms out of the hospital in a huff. Later, after he gets home, sits around, thinks about it a little while. He has second thoughts, picks up the phone, and turns Kimball in. Anne, who does not blame Kimball for Jenny's death, reveals to him what is going on and goes back to the hospital and helps him escape by driving him to the bus station. There's a good a short chase scene here. Very tense when Kimball has to leave the hospital. The cops are already pulled up at the door. And she goes around and gets her car and picks him up in a back alley. She takes him to the bus station so he can make his escape. And there Kimball makes mistake number two. When he talks to Anne, not inside the car, but outside the car, standing on the driver's side so that anyone can see him instead of parking off in the shadows. Eventually, the cops arrive, and Kimball is shot and badly wounded. But before that happens, Anne reveals to Kimball just how deep Victor's resentment toward him over the death of their daughter is. Kimball then tells her the truth, that he has spent his own vacation time and his own money in a futile attempt to save Jenny's life by bringing to town a famous heart specialist. Kimball's excuse for not telling them is lame. He says there was no point since it was not successful. Mistake number three, why bother to tell her now when he didn't do it before? Kitty, full disclosure to parents upon the death of a child, don't you think is the only way to go, instead of leaving one of the parents simmering with resentment and intent upon revenge? In this case, I have to say Kimball was asking for trouble. Am I wrong here?
No, I don't think so. I mean, because I think it would have made more sense if he really did go do that. Why would you keep it a secret? Why wouldn't you tell the parents what you were doing? I mean, you know, maybe they would have been disappointed, but, you know, at least it would have been nice to have maybe heard another opinion, because since they did ultimately lose Jenny, you know, you eliminate the thing where with Victor just blaming Kimball, saying Kimball didn't do anything. Had he gotten a second opinion that gave the same prognosis, you know, he might have been able to, it might have actually eased the passing of their daughter a little more. You know, so for a doctor to not tell someone that he's consulting with someone else on their daughter's case does seem kind of ridiculous on his part.
Well, I often take doctors to task for not talking to patients as much as I think they should do. But in any real-life situation like this, I think it's unquestionable that that the doctor, whether the patient survives or not, goes to the loved ones and tells them what was done and says we did everything we could and it did not work out. I mean, I just can't fathom why he would not say anything. It's just the craziest thing I've ever heard. Now, you know, you do this. And you got the father back there actually blaming him, thinks he did absolutely nothing. What about this business about getting it? We've seen Kimball in many, many jobs. And here he is working back in a hospital again. I have to question this. No. Don't you think that upon his escape, Gerard would have put out the word that he's a doctor and that he might just seek employment in some menial job in an environment he's used to?
I don't know. I mean, I'm almost inclined to think the opposite, that maybe the reason Gerard wouldn't put the word out or anything is because maybe he might go with the idea that that would be the last place Kimball would seek employment, because maybe he would be thinking that everybody would be on the lookout for him, and maybe that's why he was able to get the job so easy, is because maybe most people would think that, oh, Kimball wouldn't be stupid enough to get a job in a hospital.
So it's one of those kind of hiding in plain sight kind of things.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous, you don't expect it to happen. It'd be the last place he'd go to, and turns out it's the first place he goes to.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose there could be some truth to that, but it's just, it seems a little risky to think.
But you would, I mean, you know, do you know where, what city this is supposed to be?
I think this is, according to the Future of Recapture, this is in Michigan.
Okay, I mean, you would think if Kimball wanted, though, to get a job in a hospital, you would think that he would go maybe to some place like Miami or San Diego. If he were going to, if he were going to get a job in a hospital, he'd do it someplace like as far away on the continental United States from Stafford, Indiana, as he would go. I mean, so if he was just in Michigan, that probably wasn't the smartest move, because, you know, as we found out, Victor was there getting treatment, and, you know, you run the risk that just somebody you might have come across before might see you and recognize you.
How about this business of in the bus terminal where he talks to her not inside the car but standing outside the car? I mean, he's smarter than that. He couldn't have survived 55 episodes by standing out in the open that way, because he knows that he saw the police blow up the hospital.
Yeah, and then didn't he wait until he was actually out of the car
exactly.
to tell her about Jenny?
That's right.
I mean, it was almost like it was an afterthought with him. I mean, it's like, come on, Kimball, you should have said it right from the beginning.
They could have pulled off to the side and just sat there and waited. She could have gone in and got him a bus ticket. A lot of things could have happened there that would have allowed him to get away. Instead, he's just kind of standing there. The cops pull up and go, well, there he is. And they just shoot him. It's that simple. Now,
but then again, you know, Kimball has been known to do that in other episodes where he just kind
of
takes the dumb fugitive award.
Yeah. Let's find out what the Ken thinks about all this.
Yeah, he is not living by the fugitive rules in this episode. I agree, Bob, about, you know, where he gets a job. I was thinking of another episode also where he was working for a big successful contractor. It was episode 66, Three Cheers for a Little Boy or something.
Oh, Three Cheers for a Little Boy Blue.
Yeah, and remember that contractor had his poster all over the town.
Yeah, right.
And Kimball is the chauffeur for this
exactly.
guy.
All right.
I mean, talk about not staying out of sight. He's in plain sight, so somebody's going to see him.
Right.
And I like the way the story developed. It's a very, I don't know, dramatic story, because you're involved with the characters right away, you know, Victor and Anne, you know.
Screen chemistry between them. You believe right away that they're a couple.
I put Carol Rossin on my wall of fame because of this episode. She is outstanding. You know, I've criticized her a lot, you know, for her five appearances.
Well, she's not served very well in a lot of those other stories.
Oh, yeah.
Starting with her unfortunate appearance in the middle of the heat wave, yeah.
But this story, she pulled it right off. She played the wife, you know, to Victor just right. But I really love that scene when she's in the car and she finds out about her daughter, the,
right.
you know, the truth.
Right.
I mean, that was a drama scene. And Kimball is a little batty. And you know what shocked me? I don't know if you remember the first time you saw it, but when Kimball got shot, I go, wow, how often does that happen in this series?
Right.
Where he actually gets shot by a policeman.
Right.
I don't know if it's happened before. I'm trying to think of other episodes, but now
in the one where he goes back to the prison hospital, which we haven't done yet, Wings of an Angel, he gets stabbed, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, that's a stab.
He gets stabbed on the bus by that other criminal.
Yeah.
I can't really recall him actually getting shot anywhere.
Yeah. So
except in this story.
But how about Victor? After you know the wife comes home. Is that still Act 1 or Act 2?
That's Act 2, actually.
Yeah.
So I agree with you there. That is what I really noticed in this episode, too. This kind of screen chemistry, it always amazes me when I watch anything, whether it's a series or any drama, that certain actors get together and they create, when I say screen chemistry, I mean that whether they're playing lovers or spouses or whatever, that you as a viewer believe that they really are what they seem to be. Because there are other stories here in which you look at it and you want to believe real bad that it's real, but you just don't. They don't look like they belong together. And this particular story I especially admire for the fact that it doesn't waste any time. This is a one-part story. There's a lot going on here. They probably could have stretched it out to two parts, and they've got to fit it all in about 45 or 50 minutes. And they just develop the stories right away. You see Victor in the hospital, and in about 30 seconds, he tells a story we've never heard before about his daughter and about how she died. And, you know, Telly Savalas, I personally wouldn't have wanted anybody else in this story, but
right.
he always had that great ability to get emotional at the drop of a hat. All of a sudden, he looks like he's in tears. And it's really extraordinary. But I have nothing but raves about this episode when we get to the second part of the show today. But I just, once I get past those kind of, The Fugitive is a funny series in that writers always have to, the setup is always everything. And so they have to have Kimball doing things that are out of character in order to get him in trouble. And it's extraordinarily out of character for this man who is being chased across the country to just wander out of a car like he's got all the time in the world and just kind of stand there and go, well, I guess I'll get some push out of here, but I got a story to tell you first. Guess what? Your husband hates me and he's got no reason to hate me. I didn't do anything wrong. I actually went ahead and tried to save your daughter.
How about the cops in that bus station? They see Kimball. Instead of saying, hey, get on the ground, get your hands up. Shoot him right away. I mean, they could have hit anybody. I mean, that was pretty poor police work.
Right, right. Kimball just kind of lunges across there. First of all, he runs the wrong way. He should have run the other way around the car. So he runs right in front of him. He runs right up and they pull out guns and go, there he is, let's just kill everybody in the place just so we can catch him. And they got lucky that they just absolutely... You know, and I like the way it ends, though, with him laying on the ground, the music's in the background, and they turn him over, and there he is. And we're thinking, is he dead? He looks like he's dead.
Is that the end of part one?
Yeah.
All right.
The
well, then very, very auspicious, then, because we're at the end of part one of this discussion. When we come back, we're going to find out when Ken is having a new room added to his house, so he will have more walls for his girly pictures. And we'll also discuss part two of May God Have Mercy on Talking Fugitive here on Retro Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you wanna be. It's KSAV. Never far away, at work or at play. Hear the sounds that you love every day. We play the sounds of today and yesterday. yesterday, so stay with KSAV. Whether on the go or in your home, you'll hear songs of yesterday. KSAV will be with you to warm the day in every way. So share the music of KSAV. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAV. Stay with KSAV.
All right, I'm with a theme from Gerard. Isn't that Gerard's theme, that music?
I don't know. Is it? You tell me.
Well, maybe I ought to make that a trivia question. I think so. It's Pete Rugolo, and I believe that was Gerard's theme. Anyway, let's get back to Act 2 of May God Have Mercy. You did such a good job, Mr. Neer. You take it away again.
Oh, thank you. Richard Kimball's stated goal throughout this series is that he will relentlessly chase the one-armed man he believes murdered his wife, drag him back to Gerard, and force him to confess. A noble goal, although personally I don't think it will work. But what if before he ever gets that far, someone else comes along, a man with two arms who claims that he killed Helen Kimball? What happens then? And what happens if Kimball knows he's innocent? Does he just let him take the rap for it? May God Have Mercy, Part 2, Acts 3 and 4, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. Right now, Kimball finds himself in the hospital. He didn't get killed after all, recovering from a serious gunshot wound to his shoulder. His identity revealed, he's in a room with bars on the window and no way to escape. Now, in Act 2, we have a really great scene that I like very much, and this is when Anne goes back home to inform Victor that Kimball has been shot, and it's his fault because, of course, he turned him in. We find out a couple of things about Victor. One, that he is a building contractor, apparently with a shady background, because she accuses him of building what she calls instant slums, houses that are too small and not worth the money. He reminds her that he gave them a very comfortable lifestyle. And she also lets him know, and lets us know in the process, that the real reason why Jenny didn't get the help she needed is Victor's fault. It has nothing to do with Kimball. That he actually stood in the way by demanding that she have the very best doctor, and he delayed it so long that by the time Kimball found anybody that met his approval, it was already too late. And of course, he's very shocked to hear that story, that Kimball had indeed tried everything he could. Right away, he's already having second thoughts about turning Kimball in. Unfortunately, it's a little too late. I like this scene a lot. It's emotional, and those are the kind of scenes that I always like in a story. And as we mentioned a few minutes ago, this is great work between Carol Ralston and Telly Savalas, especially on her part. She does some very low-key acting here, using her fingers, using hand gestures to kind of berate him for what he's done, and really putting the blame directly on him. It's obvious that this couple is a loving couple, or has been at one time, and that their daughter's death has really driven a wedge between them. This is an excellent scene. I think that the acting here is what carries the day. What do you think, Kitty?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I believe when I reviewed this, I thought this was one of the best episodes, if not the best episode of the series. I thought Telly Savalas was just at his finest. And I hadn't seen a lot of stuff with Telly Savalas in it, but he was great. In this one particular episode, I think Kimball really kind of took more of the role of a background character or a supporting character to Victor Leonetti.
Oh, yeah, it's basically about them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You think, Ken?
Yeah, this is one of the episodes where Kimball meets someone from his past before Helen's murder. And I was trying to think of other episodes where they had done that. You know, Kimball stumbles across somebody that he knew in the past. And that's what made this story compelling. You know, I put in my review that this is, you know, if the writers would just get together, think about a good story, put Kimball in the mix, you know, add a little element of Gerard, and then have the suspense, and then have the audience not knowing what's going to happen. You know, many times I have been very, very critical that I can guess what's going to happen in Act 2, Act 3, and Act 4. And then the end, it's just like a pancake, you know, you can just fall down and say, whoopee, not much. But on this one, I didn't know how it's going to end. I know in 2 weeks we'll get into that, how the ending was. But here in Act 2, you know, you're getting very deeply involved with Victor and Anne, and you feel for them. And right away you identify with Victor because, you know, he finds out he has 10 months to live. He's on the phone, and it's just excellent acting. You're just watching him. You watch his eyes. You know, I think him. He says something to Anne, and Anne kind of gets back at him, and then he's on the phone, and just... That is what drama is, and that's what gets me involved in these episodes.
Well, I agree, and those are the things in this series, and then a lot of other things I've watched in the past. I like the emotional part of it, because sometimes writing can be very dry. It's just, as you just mentioned, going from scene to scene and following what you know is going to happen. But then when people jump off the screen, when they become real, that's more like real life. You don't know what's going to happen in real life, and you shouldn't know what's going to happen when you watch a particular story.
Did Telly Savalas have hair in this episode?
Oh, no, I've never seen Telly Savalas with hair.
In old Twilight Zone, the only time I saw Telly with hair. Yeah, he actually did have some.
He had a little bit.
Well, I didn't say it was a lot.
The first time I ever really noticed Telly Savalas was in the film The Birdman of Alcatraz, if anybody has seen that besides me. He plays opposite Burt Lancaster. He's a prisoner in the next cell, and he almost steals the film from Burt Lancaster. No small feat. So that's the first time I ever really noticed him. That was like around 1960 or something, and he was excellent there. But I can't ever really remember him having any hair. It became such a trademark. But he always had that ability to be. Almost hated and loved at the same time. This is a very delicate dance here to do this, because you don't really know whether you're going to hate Victor Leonetti or you're going to love him. Do you despise him because he turned Kimball in? On the other hand, you feel sorry for him, and you say, well, look, I can understand that a father would be this emotionally bereft after the death of his daughter. So you really can't be sure. So I think that is a major part of it. Now, in Act 2, we have a most unusual scene that, again, is quite out of character. There's only one thing. Everything seems to be in this story that needs to be there, as Ken pointed out in his review, except for Gerard. Where's Gerard? Gerard must be somewhere, right? Well, they do contact Gerard, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, pops up this scene with Gerard in his bedroom at home, and he's sitting at a desk on the phone. He's got his robe half on and half off. It seems to be the middle of the night, and they're calling him to tell him that apparently they believe they have caught Richard Kimball, but they're not exactly sure yet. Two unusual things. The most unusual is that for the first and only time I can ever remember in this series, Gerard actually balks at going to go and see whether it's Kimball or not. He starts to whine and complain that it's the middle of the night, and they got him out of bed, and he doesn't know whether he wants to go do this or not. Kitty, is this the Gerard I know, or what?
No, in fact, I think I said it in my review that this was not the Gerard that I know and hate. You know, this was totally out of character. I mean, Gerard, we have seen Gerard fly across the country on flimsier sightings than this. So, yeah, they definitely had a continuity problem there.
And who's that woman back in the other bed? It sure isn't Barbara Rush.
It wasn't Rachel Ames who actually originated the part of Mrs. Gerard.
Right,
either.
This woman seems a little bit older. I think he really upgraded when we got to Landscape.
Yeah.
And how much did this surprise you?
That was the second wife, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So,
she doesn't
right
even
there,
get called by a name. She gets called my dear.
And, well, just for a few moments there, and I think he says, get me the airline ticket.
Oh, he does go, but for him to even for a second suggest that they're bothering him in the middle of the night, you know.
Maybe
I would have expected to see him running down the hallway with his pants half on and half off.
Wasn't this after Corner of Hell, which was episode 53, right?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
But you know what? Why not put Marie Gerard? Introduce us to Marie Gerard.
Oh, I know you said that before. You wanted Marie to show up in another episode before Landscape.
Yeah, well, in Never Wave Goodbye, why not introduce her?
Well, I agree.
Give us 5 minutes, and then right here, maybe give us another 5 minutes, and then we'll see a little friction in the family. And then when we get to Landscape, then you can do the full story on Marie. That would have added to the series. You know, this, you know, I don't know what the producers are thinking, but I guess it was just living for the moment, you know.
Well, I think the producers, if they faced you down on this, might say, you can't get that. After all, Barbara Rush was a major movie star. You can't get her to come in an episode for 5 minutes. You're going to have her come on the set?
Yeah.
You think she's really going to do that? For what kind of price?
Yeah, but you think the producers' meetings, if someone would come up with the idea of, hey, you know, Gerard has a wife.
Sure.
Why not include her in this series?
I agree.
Well, then for that matter, I mean, the actress who played the wife in the first place in Never Wave Goodbye, there was nothing wrong with her. They could have had her, you know, kind of be a recurring character.
Well, they didn't do it. Listen, before we run out of time, let me just skip here to the end of the second act, and that is where Victor Leonetti has a real regrets over this. He walks the streets for a while, and he heads off to police headquarters, where he decides that the only way to save everything now is for him to announce that he indeed killed Ellen Kimball. Now, you talk about a surprise, something you don't expect. That has to be it. He goes in there. He talks to the lieutenant in charge of the case. He says, I've committed a crime. I want to admit to it. Dr. Kimball's wife, Helen, he didn't kill her. I did. And you know what? This isn't the first time that anybody's done this. I don't know if you remember or not, but back in season one, Davey did it. Remember in Fatso?
Yep.
Yeah.
He told Gerard, this was, of course, Davey was had problems, didn't really know anything about the case, and he told Gerard, he didn't do it, so I killed her. He didn't know anything, and this was almost a comedy routine. Gerard didn't believe a second of it. But to have this, I think Ken can honestly say that must have been a major surprise for you, too, to see Victor just go in there and say, I'm the one who did it, wasn't I?
Yes, completely off guard. But the writer had a good storyline going because in the beginning, Victor had 10 months to live, right?
That's right.
He has the news.
He has nothing to lose.
And then Anne tells him that, hey, Kimball's just got shot. She tells him the story.
Right.
And then Savalas has that emotional feeling. He's debating what to do.
Right.
And then he's outside the police station. That was a good scene. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, 1 minute, folks.
Okay.
Yeah, he's looking at the police station, and he kind of hesitates, turns his eye, and then walks in. I was thinking, hey, would I do that? You know, would I take the blame for something? I don't know if I would. Would you, Bob?
I'd have to be incredibly guilt-ridden to do that. And I'd have to also wonder if there's any way I can pull this off. But as we'll find out in 2 weeks, Victor knows the story. He's got all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed, and it's going to be hard for Gerard to turn him down when he faces him down and says, listen, I'm telling you, I did it. This is quite a remarkable moment. Many people have helped Kimball through the years to escape, but nobody up until now has been willing to stand there and actually take the rap and put himself in the electric chair.
Howard, do you suspect that it was Victor, you know, being able to do this that got him the part of Kojak? All right, we'll discuss that when we go into Acts 3 and 4, and that will be on October the 23rd. So the three of you will be back then. Hopefully all of you in the audience will be back as well. And the bad news is I'll be here also. Stick around in 1 hour tonight. We're going to be talking about the TV program Combat on Talkin' Television with Dave White, my favorite show. And we'll see all of you here talking Fugitive in 2 weeks on Retro Radio.